We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of the Pete George Experience. I'm Pete George. And today we have someone very, very special to me in my, I would say, recovery from anxiety, depression, and trying to take someone's own life. And today's guest, as you can see in the background, is a gentleman called Colin Lilley. Now, Colin's a Scotsman that now lives in Alice Springs. How he got there, we will find that out. And one of the beaut things about it is that while I was in the mental health unit, I started to listen to Colin Lilley's songs again, where I initially heard him on The Voice, and a lot of people did see him on The Voice. So as you can hear in the background, there's a song from Colin. It's called Broken, which is a great song. But the one, there's a couple of songs there that really resonated with me and helped me through the dark nights. Now, if you suffer from depression and that, the nights are dark, but Colin's music was light to me in those dark times. And what I would like to do now is introduce the great man himself, Colin Lilley. Welcome, Colin.
Pete, how are you? It's good to see your face.
Yeah, it's not a good one. Like the wife does say it's a good face for radio, but you know, I can only do what I can do.
No, it's nice to see you. We've only talked on the old the social media and internet and stuff. So it's nice to finally connect on the social media world. So how you been? You been good?
Yeah, been really, really good. I've tried to get this up and going probably for the last 3 years, but I'm starting to become a lot more consistent with the show.
Yeah.
And with you coming on the show has given me even more confidence to push forward.
Yeah, good.
Because as I mentioned in the introduction, Colin's got a rather I gotta say good story, because it has a happy ending. And but it's a struggle like I've had, but Colin's struggle was with addiction. And I'd like you to let us know where you started off over in Scotland.
Well, first of all, I want to say I don't think the story's quite finished yet. I think there's still quite a bit of story still to go. I've got a fair way to go, but I grew up in a small mining area just outside Edinburgh. Originally, mum and dad were from the west side of Scotland, sort of central. I grew up in a right hard mining area where it was all mining men and hard women that drank with the men, like the men. Like I grew up understanding what real feminism was. None of this idea of what people thought I knew what a feminist was, and it was somebody, it was a woman that basically knew who she was and what she wanted from life. And I grew up with men who struggled with feminists. But I definitely grew up in a place where the idea was I wanted to be, education wasn't something that I've now discovered now in life that I suffer from ADHD. And so education is something that I couldn't grasp when I was younger. And so I wanted to be the best drinker in the village, you know? You hear that saying, the only gay in the village, I wanted to be the best drinker in the village. I was crap at drinking because I always got in trouble. That was me. That was my life. I had a dad who was he was a quiet man, hard working man, worked really hard, never had a day off in 30 years, but he just didn't know how to deal with a kid like me. I had a mum who was disabled, who was in and out of hospital, I had to be a carer. I had a younger brother who basically was sick as well. So, you know, my life for a long time was focusing on everybody else and making sure I was dodging the missiles that would come from my dad. And then I grew up basically in that village, and I ended up in a relationship, and, you know, I had like 11-year relationship, and, you know, in that time I became addicted to alcohol and drugs, and I had a lady who had kids, and you know, like, my life became this mess, you know, running away, hiding, disappearing, vanishing, disappearing, angry, in trouble, abusive, you know, stealing, robbing, like, you know, parents struggling to understand why their son is basically this monster at times, you know, and I'm basically going, what the hell have we done wrong? And, you know, like, you know, I guess it's that thing like, they would have to lock up, they would have safe boxes and that hidden about the house so they could lock up their wallets and their purses. Yeah. And locked down the television, or I'd have walked out the house with, like, you know, yeah. That kind of thing, like, you know. Yeah. Who I am now is certainly not, I didn't do music back home in Scotland. I didn't play music. I did a bit of singing and stuff. I did a wee bit of, but I didn't write songs. I didn't sing. I wanted to be a singer. I wanted to be an entertainer. But, you know, I was just too much in love with the drink and the drugs. Yep. I was in love with it. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved the smell. So I ended up working in bars so I could be with it, be with the drink more. And I'd be in relationships where people would thinking I was having affairs, but I was in love with the drink. But then things happened. I would be having affairs. I would be being all those things that come along with addiction and that. Like, you know, trying to make sure I could still feed the thing that was hunger, the fire, the most. And so that was my life in Scotland. Ireland, the girl. So were we recording?
Yeah, I'm recording the audio. So, I've got all the audio. Sorry. That'll come out. That's all right.
So we went back to Ireland, came back. I came back, and I never went back to Ireland after coming back the second time to Australia. I was still drinking heavily. I met my son's mother. We had a child. Now, back home in Scotland, I was in a relationship for 11 years with a lady, and you know, I had 3 kids to her. I've got a 27-year-old, a 25-year-old, and I've also got a 21-year-old who I haven't seen for nearly, well, like, that would be roughly round about, you're looking at 20 years. I haven't been in their life, haven't been part of their life because of my alcoholism, my drinking, the abuse.
Yep.
And to get to the point I'm trying to get to is that I had ended up with this life that was very similar to the life I had in Scotland. I woke up in the Todd River after being missing for about 3 days. I don't know what happened to me. I had a big blackout. I used to, when I drank, I would have blackouts. I would wake up and wake up in different parts of Scotland, in different cities. I'd wake up, like, you know, not knowing where I'd been. And so this time I woke up with a local Aboriginal lady kicking me in the guts because I think she thought I was dead. And I think it was local fella CPR. And I woke up, I was bruised all the way down my side where she was kicking me, and she just looked at me and she said, "You don't belong here." You know, by that time I had another son. I was in an unhappy relationship. And I walked and I was going back to my house and I basically said, this isn't the life for me. Something's got to change.
Yeah.
And during, I had a lot of people coming at my life before that who were basically indicators and seeds that were probably growing inside of me for a long time. Yeah. But I think the space of the desert allowed me the room to allow those seeds to grow.
Yeah.
And then when they had grown so much, I couldn't ignore them anymore. So I decided at that point to make change.
Yeah, and it's funny how you said something dropped, and it was like me, I realised how insignificant pain was.
Yeah.
In the whole thing of Peter George.
Yeah.
And that came out from a therapist there that, you know, she stuck a circle up on the whiteboard, put my name in the middle and said, who are you?
Yeah.
And I just said, I'm this fat, useless, middle-aged bastard that's got nothing to give.
Yeah.
And she goes, what got you there? And I said, pain. So she wrote that up on the board. She said, what else do you do? I said, oh, podcast, I play a little bit of guitar. Yeah. And she just kept on writing all these things that I did. And then when I came up with no more, she turned around and said, well, there's Peter George. Where's the pain?
Yeah.
And that was the little bing.
Yeah.
It's a challenge whichever way you look at it when you're down the wrong path.
Yeah.
And it's the, you know, the people that we do hurt along the way that we don't see.
Yeah.
Until later. That.
Yeah. For a long time, you know, you don't want to be the villain of the story. We all want to be the hero. We all want to be the hero of our story. But, you know, I've learned that I have been the villain in many people's stories. And with that comes a level of awakening, a level of understanding, and then self-love, self-healing has to begin. Yeah. I remember an old fella turned around and goes to me once. He says, Colin, what's the one thing you've taken with you, wherever you've went? You know, and I was looking at him and I goes, my wallet, you know, my shoes. Like, I went through everything and he looked at me and he went, no, you are the one thing that you've taken everywhere. So what do you think you need to do? Yeah. And I flipping looked at him and I just went, you like, and that was like, to be honest, that was at one of my first ever AA meetings.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, and, you know, I used to go to AA meetings and look at people and say, what a bunch of miserable bastards. Look at them whinging at the can of drink, whinging the can of do this. And I'd go to AA meetings and I'd go, look at them. They're just flipping, well, junkies that are unhappy to flipping, well, that they can't use drugs anymore. What? But all I was doing was reflecting me. That's all I was doing. When I was being angry, when I was being abusive, when I was being the kind of human being that people didn't want around, all I was doing was reflecting what you're saying, the pain. I was reflecting that struggle and that fear that is always there. That, like, the fear is never going to go away. My mother used to tell me, you're afraid of your own shadow, Colin. And as I've got older and as I've looked at myself, and what, like, she's basically described anxiety in the simplest way.
Yeah.
Not depression, but anxiety, because being afraid of my own shadow meant I was too afraid to move forward.
Yeah, you know? And that's where I sit.
Yeah.
Like, there's days where I'm still too scared to walk out the front door, basically.
But, yeah, I know. I understand that. That is like, you know, like anxiety. You know, recently I was diagnosed with having ADHD and a thing called FND, functional neurological disorder, due to my abuse and alcohol abuse and drug abuse, which is becoming more. It's become more apparent as I've got lazy in my growth. You know, because we, like, growth is that up and down thing, like, you know, and those days, like, there's, like, when I met my wife now, like, you know, I would stay in the house, and the only days I would really do anything was when I had my son, or if she was coming over But I didn't want to get, like, get in the man cave and stay there. And because, you know, what's the point? Yeah. What is the point? You know, I was at that stage, it was the realization that I had been the villain. And, you know, like, I was trying to find, you know, how I could move forward for that. Like, you know, so I understand what you're saying about being afraid to go out in the big world, because it's scary. Yeah. It's a horrible place at times.
And then you do something absolutely mind-blowing, is start to become what I classify a very, very good performer.
Thank you.
Yeah. In front of people, because I got nervous in front of 10 people playing football, you know, like, and you're heading over to Nashville, you know, like, it's huge steps.
Yeah.
Huge steps. Like,
I have to be honest, when I first got sober, I had a mate that his offsider who was playing in Alice, he basically said, "Oh, look, my offsider's gone. Do you want to sing a couple of songs on a Sunday with me?" And I was like going, "Oh, yeah, all right." And this was me getting sober at the very beginning. Yep. And I was sitting up there, and I didn't really know how to play guitar. And he says, "Just hold the guitar. And if you don't, just stop. Don't stop singing. Just don't stop singing. Stop playing the guitar, but don't stop singing." And I remember being up there absolutely sweating, like sweating and absolutely feeling broken, like, you know, absolutely broken. And nothing was going to move me forward at that point. But, you know, I kept going back on a Sunday. Then Shawnee basically said, "Look, I've got this other gig. We're doing this other gig." And I went, "Oh, wait a minute, mate. Like, what do you mean we're doing another gig?" Got another gig. And then I would get paid for that gig. And then he left town, and basically I said, "What am I going to do?" And I had a good friend that turned around and said, "See all those things you've been writing down? See if you can put some music to them, and we'll record some of that stuff." And then from that point on, it was more about, because it was put to me that if I don't do it, somebody else is going to do it, and I'm still going to be left in a position where I'm not really fulfilling who I am. So... Yeah. Yeah, I'm still absolutely petrified. I love what I do.
Yeah,
Pete, I love what I do. I, ever since I was a little boy, going to church, I sang in church. Yep. I sang. Church was a place where I could feel free to sing. You know, because my dad wasn't really one for noise in the house. He didn't really like the noise in the house, and if I was too noisy, it would set him off.
Yep.
So I always loved singing. At school, it was one of those subjects that made me feel like I didn't have to worry about everything else, because I was useless at school, because now I know I have got ADHD. Yeah. The whole zoom, zoom, zooming around, zoom, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's keep up with me or don't bother.
Yeah, and it's like, well, I've got to go. Like, that's it. So, and people, like, as I've got older, people have always went, "Oh, that Colin, he's really intense."
Yeah.
And, like, you know, and you know, I mean, I'm a lot, but, like, I've let, before I got to the point of where I am now, I'd learned self-mechanisms. And when I got told I had this condition, I had somebody say, "Oh, well, you've dealt with it this far in your life. You're not going to have to do anything else." Like, and I'm going, "Oh, wait a minute. This is a growing point. This is
that next ride up the hill. And the one that really, now that I've heard more of your story, the one that really shocks me, because you can always find that you can go to somewhere small, do what you want to do, and you're still a little bit insignificant. You're not... It's got to be friends that you know in the Atlas that are going to be at the pub that are going to say, "Oh, well done, Colin. Good on you. Well done." But that next step that I saw you took was the voice.
Yeah.
That to me, you know, like, everybody gets up there on that stage and they look scared. But how hard was that for you to do?
That was amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I'd travelled around the country up and down. I'd supported a lot of well-known artists, and pushed myself up the coast and stuff, and even including Jacinta when she was a musician. I'd supported her in her band and got to meet some incredible people that way. But The Voice was one of those things. I didn't want to do The Voice. I was like, oh, I'm not doing The Voice. I'm a singer-songwriter. I'm an artist. But my manager at the time, my manager who I had at the time, basically looked at me and he said, look, Colin, do you want to take a chance? And now, taking chances for somebody like me who is so wired with anxiety and and letting go, there's no such thing as let go. Well, let go. Yeah. I'm holding on to things that I had when I was five, like, you know, still. But, you know, so it was one of those things where I went, okay, then I'll trust you. I'll trust what my family's saying and I'll go for it. But it was frightening. But what it gave me, and it was, a lot of people go, oh, The Voice is a terrible show. It was the best. They treated me beautifully. Yep. And it gave me the opportunity to know that I can do it at that level. I can do it at that level. If I push myself and I do everything that I've been taught and I sit back and I take the time and I believe and I look at my higher power and I ask my higher power for that support, nothing in this world can't be done. There's nothing.
And that's, you know, like you know, it's funny, I look at, and I don't look at it in a negative way, it's just that how I wasn't brought up. I wasn't brought up as a religious person at all. Like I got, you know, kicked out of Sunday school for telling the teacher to fuck off, you know, basically, at five. Yeah. Where did your son learn that from? Well, I don't know. But there's the likes, and I'll go a little bit down the political path here just for a minute, and it's not hard. I don't think, even though he may have made some errors, Scott Morrison wouldn't have got through those 3 years without the belief in a bigger power.
Yeah.
Because he could separate himself at home when he had to.
Yeah.
And then he'd go for that solace on a Sunday to church.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's like Don, he's quite religious and he finds that warmth and comfort in that. And I think a lot of people do, and we criticize too many people for doing that. And that's, that to me is weird, but
I think being a creative kind of individual, I believe I can't take credit for everything that I've produced that comes from me. Yeah. I believe it comes from somewhere else. There's like a conveyor belt up there, and now and again I can grab things, you know. And I'm lucky enough that I can translate what I've been given and put it out to the world, like, you know. But for me, my higher power is all about, you know, when I was trying to get really sore, this bottle of water would have been my higher power at one point.
Yeah.
This, just to sit there and focus on that. So I could get through the struggle, the pain, the fear, the anxiety, the hurt that I was feeling that was making me want, that I was feeling, and that's the word, what I was feeling, because that with the feeling was what made me want to go and drink, made me want to go and use. So it gave me that breath, that space, and it still does give me that space to basically be the better version of that I can be each day, like, you know?
Yeah. And the big thing, I suppose this question just comes out of a little bit of vanity for me, but when the first person turned, did you see it and feel it, or did you just keep singing?
I just kept singing because I was lost in the moment. Like, you know, for me, like you walk onto that stage, it's dark. You can't see anything. You can see the chairs. But then, you know, like, for me, it's about just being me at that time. Afterwards, it's about the connection. But when I'm on stage, it's all about being the best I can be right there, right then, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what it's about for me.
And that's like the song that probably says it all is Give Thanks that you wrote.
Okay. That's you.
That is all just you saying, here's my stake in the ground.
Yeah.
You can run with me or not. That's how I felt with Kid Fanks. It was just this line in the sand. Here we go. Yeah. I'm going to tell it as I see it.
Yeah. I mean, I was very – thank you for that. I wrote that song while I was out in the desert driving, feeling completely isolated and having a moment where it was like, this is what a load of, like, what am I doing? And then all of a sudden, that silence came up with Give Thanks. Yeah. And I remember when I came home with that song, Jacinta was like, the wife was like, what is that? And she went, and I said, like, that. Because I believe that first album, Glass Homes, is very much that purge, bringing out everything that was the struggles and the pain and the fighting that was going on, the internal arguments and that. And it's that purge. And then as I've progressed and I've moved on, I've tried to become a craftsman with my songwriting. But there's still a big element of purge, you know?
And it's, you know, like... you're my first artist on Tune In Tuesday. I'm going to try to start doing all the music that, like, I can't, I can play a few chords and I can't sing for shit, but growing up, we listen, you know, you sit down with mum and dad and their friends when you're a little kid and you listen to musicals and, you know, like, even Punish with Demis Roussos and Nana Mouskouri.
Nana Mouskouri. Nana Mouskouri. My mum loved Nana Mouskouri.
So you get pounded with those, but you're getting this broad spectrum of music under your belt, and I've never stopped loving it. And, you know, there's music throughout time that it always hits a pitch, and that's probably Give Thanks. That was the first one I heard in the mental health unit.
Right.
And then The Wall was the next one.
And
I could relate to being that little boy in the in the video. And you know, like, it's taken me a lot. I thought I was going to cry with some of this today, because it just brings back so many memories. And to me, your anthem is Broken. How did you come about that?
Broken, thank you. Broken was one of those songs that, I guess, I co-wrote that song with a couple of guys down in Melbourne. I went for a trip, I was touring, and I managed to get a co-write with this fella called Pip Norman, and we sat down and we just talked and we just shared different stories. And the one common story that came out of the whole thing was the fact that men, mostly in general, men and young men, like, would you call it teenagers, it's like the communication thing is something that we don't do. And because of that, the sense of feeling broken becomes a bigger and more intense thing. And I love the analogy of it broken for me is the Japanese take a beautiful vase that might have been broken and then they repair it by using gold that gives it more wealth and more worth. And for me, I feel that that's what our lives are. Our lives are that same thing, is that we basically can sit down and be broken, but then we get moments of gold given to us. And if we take those moments of gold, we can become something of more worth and something better. But it's you have to be ready to hear it and listen.
And that's one of the mottos that I have with the podcast and the Pete George Experience, and eventually Out of the Cave, which will focus on just men's mental health and programs that I can do to try to promote that. That's what Out of the Cave will end up being.
Yeah.
But If you've got something in front of you that you don't know you've got, and that's where all of this sparks off, you know.
Yes.
And it's a tough trail to walk.
Yeah. But yes, it has.
And I'm glad I've walked it.
Yeah, that's good.
People, you know, like I was only tablets away from dying.
Yeah.
I've like you was in the river.
Yeah.
I can't remember days.
Yeah.
And you know, some of the weird things is I can remember sitting down talking to someone that wasn't even there, reaching for cups of coffee that wasn't even there.
I got thrown out of pub once because I was arguing with myself in the mirror, and the barman says, "You're going to go, mate." And I says, "I'm going to give him a kicking." That fella there, and it was me. I was arguing with myself in the mirror. So, like, no wonder I got thrown out the pub.
Yeah. Like, at least I was in a semi-nut house talking to myself. Like,
no, I was in a pub. I was like, going, see you, pal, I'm going to take you. And but, you know, that must have, that, I feel and believe that that was my higher power talking to me and going, mate, you need to have a word with yourself, you know. But I wasn't ready to have an honest word with myself. But again, it's just that thing where, if we go back to broken, it's that thing of being able to ask, are you okay? Are you okay? You know, and I think we are afraid to ask those questions when people are hurting, and we can see they're hurting because sometimes we don't know how to deal with rejection if somebody says, no, go away, F off. Yeah. But I think once you've done the work yourself, you can deal with that and you know what to say to people.
Yeah, I got to give me one of my episodes unashamedly plug here, and it's called The Social Contract of Mental Illness. And it's all around, are you okay day and asking that question.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm okay with it because I've been there. You're probably okay because you've been down the path and you understand how to weave that path.
Yeah.
But if it's just, you know, the average person down the street and they say, go up and ask someone, are you okay? No one's taught them to handle the good consequent or the bad consequent. And that's where I've come up with the social contract. You know, like, what if you said to me, Pete, how are you? And I said, I'm fine. Yeah. I went home and took my life. How are you going to cope with that? That's the that's the nuts of the social contract.
Yeah.
And that's where I love the story of Broken, because it breaks it down into its simplicity through a story.
Yeah.
And I've actually told in the Tune In Tuesday how you actually did it, which I thought was pretty cool. So through with Instagram and all of that and doing it remotely. But
And we did and released it during COVID as well. That was the big thing. I was like, should we release this song during COVID? And then it was like, well, how do we do a clip in that? And you know, I felt it was the right time to release it, but I've had so many people say, oh, you wasted that. You should have released it after COVID because it's such a good song. And I was like, well, it's only for the people that know me, really, and want to hear me and want to listen to me that would have got it, you know, and understood it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and to me, that song should be used in a mental health campaign. That's how strong the message is.
Yeah.
You know, like as I said earlier, you know, your storytelling is second to none. And that's what I like, you know, like you have a look at some of the people that you went up and down the coast with, like Diesel, I think you did, James Rain. James Rain, Australia Crawl, we were going to pubs having $10 jugs, you know, like watching those boys play on a Saturday night. And the same with Diesel, you know, like I've photographed those boys. So you have the words, I have the pictures. So as a photographer, you know, like, and you were saying that there's a higher place. That higher place for me is Bali.
Yeah, right.
I go to Bali and I get involved. I get invited to their Galungan festivals or any of their festivals. I dress up and I tell the story of the people.
Yeah.
So it's just an enjoyment. That's my enjoyment when I go away. People say, oh, you should be taking more photos. I said, no, I've got to do it when I'm right. And I've got to be able to tell a story along the way, and that's what I do. But so what is Colin Lilly up to these days? You've come along a tough journey.
Yeah, I think the past couple of months has been all about Jacinta. all about my wife and her job and her basically getting into the position she's in. We've run a few, I've run a few hiccups with that now and again because of her work, because we live in a world where people make assumptions, and I'm bad at that. I make assumptions. My kids will tell you exactly what this game, what I'm like making assumptions. But, you know, like Jacinta and I, we've tried to separate our work as much as we could, because there's so many people that dislike what she says and what she does. And then they go, well, you are with us, so you must feel the same. And I'm going, oh, you're making, like, what do you call it? Like, and I have to put it in a way that you've got a partner. Does your partner like the same ice cream as you like? Or do they like the what's their favorite color in that? And the thing that makes Jacinta and I relationship so strong and so good is that, you know, she's from Alice Springs and I'm Scottish, you know, so there's a constant debate of things and us working on that debate. And that's growth.
It's like that, can you?
And so we have our moments, but you know, it's my job's been as her husband is to support her in the last few months to be a husband and do what a husband does, and that's support. Regardless if we agree on everything or we don't agree on everything. And so we've been spending that time being, I've been spending a lot of time trying to get used to a new job and trying to get the family getting comfortable with it. But this week I fly off to Nashville. I was in the process of getting a working visa, but it just went, I've got to come back earlier from the trip for my interview with the US consulate and get the stamp, boom. But I'm off to Nashville next week for some showcasing for the Americana Fest. Then I come back, I'll get my visa, so then I'll work at getting some gigs later in the year. And then I have a few gigs organised for the coast here in Australia. Then in, we're around about March, I have Port Ferry.
Have you ever been down to that?
That's the first time. I'm really excited about that. I've been trying to get that.
Been in Victoria, and we used to go down there every now and again. It's a great festival.
I have been chapping at the bit to get that festival, and I was so looking forward to being able to watch Kumin J. Roach, but sadly he passed away. I have to. I'm a bit sad about that, but you know, I'm really excited about going there. And then there's talk of me doing a small halls tour in the WA, which we've just got to finalise that. And then, fingers crossed, I'll be back across to the States doing some work over there in LA and back to Nashville for some co-writes and reconnecting with the people that I've connected with and try to get some work. So that's the plan. But plans go and they come, and so at the moment that's what we're looking at doing, maybe for the next, from now up into the mid next year.
That's cool,
and that's quite good.
It's excellent. You deserve everything you get. You know, you've put in the effort, you've put in the hard yards of addiction, and got to yourself to a place where you know, To be honest, some people you look at them and you go, oh, they're still struggling.
Yeah.
Externally, you can see it, but I think you've got the outlets. And the support. I know.
No, we still struggle. And I've got good friends and I've got a good support network, and I can always go and meet friends no matter where I am in the world and go and hang out with them. But I think, for me, it's like, you know, and if those people listening in Canada are looking to bring Colin Lilly over, I'm happy. Just give me an address and I'll be there.
Don's a muso as well. He's a drummer.
If he's needing a wee bit of guitar and vocals done, I'm happy to come over, mate, and hang out with you. We can go and do a few things.
He's still the same. They were here in about 6-7 years ago, and it was New Year's Eve. And we were, you know, we were having a drink and there was loud music, and that was a trigger, and he had to get outside, and we just calmed it down for him. And and got him back on track. You know, like the people that you love are more important than a drink and loud music.
Yeah, that's it. And,
And you know, it's you know, the I know we've only met here on and chatted online, but you know, anytime you're on the case, mate, if you want to call in, you call in. It's
Definitely, Pete.
You can hear me bad guitar playing, mate.
Yeah.
I pluck a guitar with five thumbs.
Yeah, I will say this, that I came to the conclusion that that people are saying, "Oh, how do you measure success, Colin? What do you see as being successful?" And I say to them, "Well, being the kind of human being I am, I'm finding the more successful I get with the music, the further away I'm playing from the bar. So, like, the further away I play for the bar, I'm doing all right, like, you know." So that's it.
Yeah, here's one last serious question. If there was another Colin Lilly out there at 17, what would you like to tell him?
Well, I guess we would hope that he would want to sit and listen to me, because I know at 17 I didn't know what I was saying to anybody.
That's the big thing.
I was being a big ass. At the moment, so I've got a stepson who I love dearly. He's the oldest one. He just sent us, but he's definitely in that path of he wants to do it his way, and he'll do it his way. And no matter what advice anybody can give him and what kind of love we want to give him, he will do it his way. Yep. So I wrote a song called The Headlights for him.
Okay.
And I guess it's for anybody who's willing to just listen. I think for me, I would say to myself, I say, look, there's a lot of forest out there, you know, and there's a lot of darkness out there. You need to start getting comfortable sitting on your own and be comfortable with self. And the minute you start realizing how comfortable you can be with self, the less you're going to want to be trying to be something more than you're not, like, you know. I think that was you know, it's the quiet times that scare me the most when I was younger. Now it's those times I'll relish those quiet times, and because now it's all about enjoying those times, you know, enjoying the quiet times, because, you know, if you don't enjoy the quiet, and another thing I would say is that enjoy the hard, painful times, because when you enjoy those times, you realize when life's good, because life is good. Yes, brilliant. Yeah. So that's the thing. I would say that would be something I'd give myself at 17. Enjoy the pain, enjoy the struggle, because when you're not struggling and you're not feeling that pain, you will know what is good about life. Yeah. You will know what is good about life.
Well, my new great friend from the Alice Springs, and you're an inspiration to me. I won't hide the fact, you know. Like,
thanks, Pete.
And I hope this conversation inspires others to find their lane. I put out a post a while ago, how do you find your lane on Facebook? I couldn't find it. I could not find it. You know, I'd worked for myself. I was a successful photographer, a successful salesperson.
Yeah.
And when I started to come okay, I just thought, what's my lane? And then I went to school to study screen and media. And as I've told them at school, I can tell them here now, you know, when you're teaching the teacher and you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. I gave that up, but I've continued to try to write some short screenplays around mental health. So I'm starting to find my lane and doing this. I love doing it, even though...
Yeah, wow, that's great.
Though before we started, I think I went and had about 17 nervous peas. It was like back playing footy again. Hang on, coach, I've got to go to the boggy. But, yeah, it was... I still get nervous, but once I get into it, I'm okay. And
well, that's because you care. If you didn't have the nerves, it would mean you didn't care.
Yeah,
that's and, that's how I do with it when it comes to my performance.
No, yeah, and all I'd like to say is thank you for taking the time. I know it's precious time when you're starting to move forward and get on to Nashville and things like that.
Yeah,
and I'll if we talk in 12 months' time, I'll remind you when Father's Day is next time. That was my fault.
Yeah. That was I've been that involved in calling. Yeah. I'd completely forgot, and it wasn't until I went, oh no, like you know, and I was like, oh, but yeah. So to all the dads out there, I hope you had a beautiful Father's Day, and I hope the love was full. I will go back to that being the teacher in the classroom to simplify it for me to understand what you were saying there. Somebody turned around and says you can meet one asshole in a day, or you can meet 10 assholes in a day. If you meet one asshole in a day, you've met an asshole. If you've met 10 assholes in a day, who's the asshole?
Yeah,
that that's
true. Very true, and that's what
that
I was doing
for a long time.
Not in the sense that I was nasty or aggressive to people.
No. It was just
I kept on pushing people away.
Yeah, that's it. You're like, would you know, you're not having them. You're not. So that was something that when I heard that, I went away and I like it took me. You know, that was a slow thing. It was like you know when the right things come, they take a long time to come into your head. You know. And that was one of those things that took a long time. It took me about a week until I saw that person again. I went, hey, you were calling me an asshole because of the resentments I was holding and me pushing everybody away. So, wow. And it was like, yeah, great. So, yeah. But I'm really grateful that we've had this time and we've sharing and I look forward to talking to you in 12 months. But before then as well.
Yeah, so once again, thanks for coming on to the Pete George Experience.
Yes, been great.
You've seen zipping across the bottom there, Colin's websites, which is colinlilly.com.au, and you can find his music on Spotify, YouTube, and I left off SoundCloud, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and Apple Music.
Apple Music and all the platforms. So all of that will be in the notes for today. Yeah.
And Facebook and Instagram and just say hello.
And I'll tell you one thing about Colin. He does respond. He does respond if you put a comment, you know, he gives you a little love heart or whatever. There's always that connection with the people that are helping him to get to his goal. And I believe, mate, you will get to that goal without a problem. So thanks for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hope you enjoyed your time.
I did. It wasn't as painful as I thought it was going to be. It was really, really, really nice.
Oh, thank you. And as I go to sign off every time.
You okay?
Yeah. And that's the big sign off. So thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.